Hey everyone, Rob here from the Snapcast, and today I'm joined by Jerry yet again.
Hey guys, what's up?
And today we're going to be talking about mill strategies when it comes to our combo decks. Now we're going to be talking two different mill strategies. One is the mill your opponent, the other is the self-mill. And you'll see the mill your opponent is, it's kind of combo-esque, but it's also wrapped around a very heavy control shell, right Jerry?
Absolutely.
So it kind of blurs the line there with the combo theme that we're doing for these 12 modern combos at Christmas. However, when we look at the second one, that being Crabvine, you'll see how self-mill does get more into the combo feature, and it's very similar to some decks we've already covered. But first, let's do traditional mill.
All right, so the first thing we have with the traditional mill is the deck has always existed. Yep. The word mill comes from the card Millstone. Not only our game takes it, but other games actually use the colloquial phrase of milling. Pokemon, Yu-Gi-Oh, you name it. When we refer to milling, we're aforementionedly revering the card Millstone, which was two for an artifact, pay two, tap it, target player mills two, which is how it would read today if they were to reprint it in a core set. Wink, wink, I think they're going to reprint it in a core set.
Nice.
But anyways, I digress on that. The strategy has always been kind of this is one of the weird strategies where you don't ever want it to be good in a card game context, because if this is the number one thing you're doing, it has always had the negative context of, oh, so I don't get to play my cards. This is how you win the game. And if you're not playing your cards, you're not playing the game. It makes the game really bad. So in the context of how mill has always been made, it's always been a supplement to your strategy. Millstone was a supplement to winning alongside the 3-1 for 6 with phasing that you could protect with counter magic. It was another way to win the game. Or in standard, we had the Drown Yard, Nephalia Drown Yard, which was 1 blue and a black, tapped land, target player mills 3. It wasn't the main way to win a game, but it was an alternate way to victory.
Absolutely.
Well, with the printing of a massive amount of mill cards, an extended... people played mill because they liked it. It was never seen as good. It was always missing a few pieces. It was not quite good enough on the control side of things. It never had quite enough of the correct mill cards to sequence correctly. And it's kind of always been seen as that meme deck that people would love to have and foil out. Well, in comes Zendikar Rising. Zendikar Rising did something for the deck that is like what it did for mill, what it did for Oops All Spells, where it printed so many cards that this deck just needed to fire off and be consistent. I'm talking about the obvious Mr. Ruin Crab himself. That is the landfall one. When a land enters the battlefield, each opponent mills 3. Blood Chief's Thirst, the one man removal spell from the set. Maddening Cacophony, which is 1 in a blue, each opponent mills 8. And then has a kicker of 4. If it was kicked, each opponent mills half their library rounded up. And then on top of that, the deck got, some versions do play this, the land Clearwater Pathway, which helps fix some of the mana issues in the deck that it always had. So they add it, you effectively have 8 one-drop crabs, 8 one-drop removal spells, or at least up to in some cases. You have up to 8 copies of 2 mana, mill 16 to 20% of your deck cards. And then you have the obvious Mr. Archive Trap, which is free mill if they search their library. And in Modern, we're using all fetch lands. It's mill 13. And then you add it up with your incremental mill cards of Mesmeric Orb. Whenever a permanent becomes untapped, that player mills a card. So if they untap 5 lands, they mill 5 cards. Pretty self-explanatory. Nothing particularly fancy here. The choice is really, do you want to play a companion or not? Mill gets the option of Lurrus of the Dream Den. If they choose to play Lurrus of the Dream Den, they don't get to play Fraying Sanity, which doubles all of your mill cards. Fraying Sanity says whenever an opponent has cards going to the graveyard, at the end of the turn, they put that many cards on the top of their library into their graveyard. So if they had 7 cards going to the graveyard from anywhere, doesn't matter, they have 7 cards from the top of their deck now go to the graveyard.
You would see a mill strategy pop up before Zendikar Rising, but just the number of tools we got with Zendikar Rising really helped the deck out. Even sets like Throne of Eldraine gave us a couple cards too, especially in Drowning the Lock. That gave a really good counter spell because you're milling your opponent, so you're able to fill their graveyard, and what seemed to be like a decent counter spell now became an incredibly powerful 2-drop counter spell.
Right, absolutely. where this deck shines is against all combo decks. This deck absolutely houses combo. You get to play four main board Surgical Extraction. If you're putting all these cards in your opponent's graveyard, you can interact with them by removing them all from the game. If you surgically extract, like, Ad Nauseam out of an Ad Nauseam player's deck or Thassa's Oracle, it becomes very hard for them to win.
Or going against Tron and you hit one of their Tron pieces.
Yeah, hit a Tron piece. Now they have to play Fair Magic. Like, any type of combination of cards where you're trying to do something where you're required to have these things, Mill punishes those strategies pretty well.
Absolutely. And its sideboard, too, just helps fuel its defense, really. We get a couple more of those Surgical Extraction effects with Extirpate, which is a split-second one. And it's a little bit better in that aspect. But the downfall is, with Surgical Extraction, it has that Phyrexian black mana, meaning that you can pay two life rather than one swamp. They cast that instant. With Extirpate, it is just one black mana, so you have to have the mana available. But with Split Second, they cannot respond to protect it.
Correct. The sideboard also shores up how Mill has always historically been really bad against aggro. I mean, any lightning bolt strategy, like, even in back in old, extended, early modern, where Wild Nacaudle was banned, like, you could not play Mill and then run into a Wild Nacaudle deck and you just die. At that time, there really wasn't removal for the deck. You didn't have Bloodchief's Thirst and Fatal Push. But years of printings later, the deck has streamlined itself to be more consistent, at least enough to possibly win a game one against those decks. But then bringing in Ensnaring Bridge and Crypt Incursion really just shores up those matchups to pretty easy wins. Crypt Incursion is the most interesting card because you won't see this in any other deck list. None. It's two and a black for an instant. Exile all creature cards from target player's graveyard. You gain three life for each card exiled this way. So say you're playing against humans. They have 10 creatures in their graveyard. You Crypt Incursion them. 10 creatures times three life is you gain 30 life. And you make it impossible for them to kill you. And the other piece is the Ensnaring Bridge, the holdover from 8th edition that's still in modern. The deck does dump its hand pretty quickly. It plays very, very cheap, very efficient spells, so it makes sense that your last card in your hand should be an Ensnaring Bridge. Now remember, if you're siding in Ensnaring Bridge, Lurrus can no longer be the companion, so what this deck tends to do sometimes is that it will side in the Lurrus and the three Ensnaring Bridge and side out four other pieces, usually the odd one-ofs that you'll see in a lot of these decks, like Mission Briefing or Search for Ezcanta, something like that.
Yep. The deck, too, is, I would say, on the lower end of our modern deck price. It's a $640 deck, and you could probably trim it a little bit, too. Now, there is one land in here. A lot of first-timers are going to look at this deck list and ask, why am I running it? Jerry, you probably already know exactly what I'm thinking of. That is Oberoi, Palace in the Clouds.
Yes, between Oberoi, Palace in the Clouds, Sheldock Isle, and Minimo School at Water's Edge, and now Riverglide Pathway, this is the blue deck respecting Choke and Boil being cards. You don't want to be stone dead to them. So, and in this list we're looking at currently, it only has four actual islands. So Choke and Boil are just cards they should not slide in.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Mystic Sanctuary is also an island. Let me get that out there.
And a good thing, though, another reason, or one of the big things that we do with Oberoi, Palace in the Clouds, is you're able to bounce it to your hand. So if you don't draw a land and you want to get a land drop to trigger your crabs, then you can pay one, return it to your hand, which you can tap itself for that one mana and then return it to your hand.
Yep.
And then you can replay it as your land, get your crab triggers, mill some more.
Yep, you reload your crab triggers. The other interesting land combo with the deck is a Field of Ruin. Since Field of Ruin is it's an effect that makes them search, you get to actually hit them with a free archive trap with Field of Ruin.
Yes, that is not a may effect. They must search their library.
They
That's
must
key.
Search. So archive trap becomes free in that respect. And it takes another land out of their deck if they have one. So Field of Ruin effectively makes archive trap mill 14, which is pretty cool.
Oh, yes.
So you do have to play some number of basics because of the Field of Ruins.
Yeah, and here we got, in this one, we got some snow-covered island swamps. We got the watery grave, the snow-covered island swamps. So we got, five total? Yeah, five total basics. Pretty good.
Yep. So you are, in respecting Boil and Choke, you are still soft to Blood Moon a little bit.
Yep. Go to draw your first seven. What are we looking for in this deck?
You're looking for a crab. Every opening hand should always have a crab.
have at least one crab.
Yeah, you would mulligan. If you don't show a crab in your opener, you just mulligan.
My strategy when it comes to my crabs, because I play Vengevine, I do have Hedron crabs in there, is if I'm suspecting a, like if I already know the deck I'm playing against and it has spot removal, like that turn one bolt or the fatal push, I'm going to hold my crab up until my second turn, so then I can play it, and then when I get priority back, because as soon as it hits the field, I have priority, I can play my land, get my first landfall trigger, and go to resolve that or fetch, and whatever it is they want to do. So at least if they kill it, I've gotten at least one mill trigger off of that crab.
Exactly. And it plays both ways in both traditional mill and self-mill.
Okay. And just a good thing to think about is, like, if you know your opponent is notorious for being a burn player, don't run out crab turn one. Do it on turn two. And that way there you can at least get your land.
Now, I don't know if my mulligan rule for traditional mill applies to self-mill, because you don't run Ruin Crab in that list, correct?
That is correct. We do not run Ruin Crab. We have other mill outlets, and we'll cover that here shortly when we talk about self-mill. How easy is this? So, say I saw this. I was like, oh, this is pretty cool. My opponent doesn't get to play Magic, and I can win through Infinite Life. This is something Tyler and I discussed when we were talking about Collected Company and Heliod combo, is Infinite Life is a very difficult thing to beat. Mill is one of those strategies that can beat that Infinite Life.
Yes. This is on the difficulty scale, probably a 4. Yeah. You have to learn to count to 60. That's a little more important.
Yeah.
Counting the 60 is harder. And then you're always the control deck, and builds vary. That's your hardest part is varying your build, give or take the metagame. Like, this deck that we're looking at currently has no copies of Thoughtseize. It plays Maddening Cacophony over Glimpse the Unthinkable for targeting reasons. So you have to more or less understand how people are going to sideboard against you and how you need to beat them.
Yeah, and then, of course, when it comes to your Surgical Extraction or your Extirpate targets, you need to know what your opponent is trying to do and get that biggest piece that's going to disrupt it, whether it's that Tron land or that combo piece.
Knowing what your opponent is doing is much more relevant in this deck, kind of similar along the lines of old Lantern Control, where you absolutely had to. This, you 80% of the time have to know what they're up to.
And just be ready to get some of the most saltiest players you can think of. Mill is definitely looked as one of the more degenerate decks that is, I would say, prominent out there. They'll say it takes no skill. They'll insult your choice on it. You know what? If you come out with a W, you came out with a W. Good for you.
Yep. This deck you do not make friends with. You're not here to make friends, though. If you're playing it, you're winning.
Exactly.
I guess the other thing I'd like to mention with Mill is that occasionally some other decks will try to play some very unscrupulous Magic cards to beat you. One of those being the most popular one, Gaia's Blessing, which is one in a green. I don't even remember its full effect, but if it goes into a graveyard, it gets it shuffles the graveyard back or something like that. It beats Mill. Like, you must find an answer to cards like that. And another card, for example, would be Wheel of Sun and Moon, where if someone puts a wheel on themselves, it's an enchantment aura, you enchant a player. If any cards would go from the top of their library to their graveyard, they go to the bottom of the library instead.
Yeah. Gaia's Blessing, you nailed it. When Gaia's Blessing is put into your graveyard from your library, shuffle your graveyard into your library.
Yep. It has another effect. It doesn't even matter. They don't want it. It's a card that you throw into the graveyard to reshuffle you, and this is how you beat Mill. So this is where your Surgical Extractions and your Extirpates come into play.
Now, they will still get that effect, but it's at least out of the game, and now you're working a little bit harder to count to 60 again.
Exactly. And the important part is, if you have a Fraying Sanity going in the non-Lurrus version, that still counts to Fraying Sanity numbers, so you're not out of it yet.
I think that's it, though, when it comes to self-mill. You got that control shell, your opponent is putting all the cards from their library into their graveyard, and good games.
All right. Now we're talking Crabvine.
Yeah, now we're going to talk Crabvine.
All right, Rob, this is you, bud.
And we're talking this one here because this is more of a self-mill strategy. In Crabvine, it is very similar to what we are kind of doing with Oops All Spells, but instead of flipping our entire deck at once, we're using some of these mill components, such as Hedron Crab. You could also be using Fate Stitcher as well. which when Fate Stitcher enters the battlefield, you put the top three cards from your library into your graveyard. Or, sorry, not Fate Stitcher. Stitcher Supplier. There we go. Fate Stitcher was a different one of that we were running one time before. So when Stitcher Supplier enters the battlefield or dies, put the top three cards of your library into your graveyard, and it is a one drop. So instead of looking for a crab, I'm looking for a Stitcher Supplier or a Hedron Crab, and then some of my other mill cards. And here I have Glimpse the Unthinkables and Memory Sluice. Memory Sluice is in a flex spot. Glimpse the Unthinkable, target opponent mills 10. And this is kind of a key difference between your traditional mill or the mill that we just talked about, because those use the word each opponent. This is key because of Leyline of Sanctity. You have to watch out for that. So your sideboard will be kind of tuned to help you defeat that enchantment that gives your opponents hexproof. With Memory Sluice, this has a very interesting mechanic that came out of Shadowmoor called Conspire. And what Conspire does is, as you play the spell, you may tap two untapped creatures you control that share a color with it. When you do, copy it, and you may choose a new target for that copy. So for one, Dimir, so blue or black, this comes in at sorcery speed. Target player puts the top four cards of his or her library into his or her graveyard. So target player, again, you're going to be targeting yourself a lot of, for most of these, but sometimes you may have to change your strategy from self-mill to milling your opponent, and that's based on how they're combating you. So I can do this on turn two if I have two crabs out, or a crab and a Stitcher Supplier out, and then I get to mill myself 8. What are my payoffs now? Narcomoeba, Prized Amalgam, Vengevine, Creeping Chill. Very similar, again, to what we saw in our Oops All Spells list. Narcomoebas come into play. They trigger your Prized Amalgams. They come back. Casting two creatures is very easy for us to do, so getting our Vengevines out as well. Another mill card that I missed was Merfolk Secret Keeper, and this came out of Eldraine, and this has the adventure mechanic on it, where for one blue, it's a sorcery. Target player puts the top four cards in, and now that's a creature you get to have on standby to cast as your second creature to get your Vengevines out. Very quickly, this can set up for a turn two or a turn three kill, which is where I kind of like to include this in the combo aspect. Others may say it's more of a aggro, but that's how this deck works. Another very neat interaction we have here is with the card Carrion Feeder and Gravecrawler. So Carrion Feeder is a one-drop zombie. Oh, what gave us Carrion Feeder? Because this wasn't always legal in Modern, was it?
No, it became printed in a...
Wasn't it Horizons?
Yeah, it was Horizons.
Yeah, Modern Horizons gave us this wonderful outlet. And we can sacrifice a creature to put a +1/+1 counter on Carrion Feeder. With Gravecrawler, I may cast Gravecrawler from the graveyard as long as I control a zombie. Carrion Feeder is a zombie, so if I mill over a Gravecrawler and I have Carrion Feeder, I can still cast it. And you can sack, cast, and just beef up your Carrion Feeders. And there's other very neat, intricate combos too you can do with Prized Amalgams to maximize your Prized Amalgams coming out and beefing up your Carrion Feeder. I'm not going to get into that here because this is just your intro to it. Your mana base is very simple, very weak to Blood Moon. Generally, you're only running either two swamps or one swamp and one island. So you need to be mindful of that.
The good thing is they're usually just dead before they even plant the Blood Moon.
Correct. Or it's too far gone. You already have at least a good enough board state out there, because you do still have your Narcomoebas that can pull your Prized Amalgams out. Don't be afraid to play into Chalice of the Void. If they chalice on one, great. You're still casting creatures to trigger your Vengevine. So if you're going to just get that, you know, Gravecrawler counter, cool. Cast it again. Your Vengevines get to slam on the field, and you get to hit your opponent for 4 to 16 points of damage.
Yeah, man, talk about Merfolk Secret Keeper being the most perfect magic card for this deck. It's a blue creature that fuels the Memory Sluice Conspiring, mills you 4, and on the sorcery side, and it's a 1-mana creature that fuels your Vengevines, like, come on. Like, why is this, like, geez, it does everything you want it to. It's the perfect tool.
Absolutely. And I think it was the cards such as Carrion Feeder, Merfolk Secret Keeper that really helped this deck come out.
Yep. Sideboard time. These are your sideboard pieces. Why are we playing these?
So just like with traditional mill, you are weak to your aggro decks. So we have Fatal Pushes in here. We have Abrupt Decays and Assassin's Trophies too. Because depending on the deck you're playing against, you may need to blow up just a permanent rather than blowing up just a normal land or a normal card. So that could be like a Tron piece. The Abrupt Decays are great because they're uncounterable, and it helps take care of cards like Rest in Peace, Chalice, whatever your potential control opponent may be bringing in against you. Damping Sphere is another one that's kind of loose. You need to be careful because you can lock yourself out with Damping Sphere, depending on how much mana you have. The deck only runs 19 lands to include 10 fetches. So your actual land count is only 9. Titan was a very powerful deck when I was playing this, both in Knoxville and Indy, at the beginning of 2020, when Paper Magic was still a thing. So I had to bring this in to slow them down. Surgical Extractions for your combo decks, and again, your Fatal Pushes to also take care of your small creatures, and Nature's Claim. And probably the best card to play against any burn player, Collective Brutality.
Mm-hmm. Another interaction note with Surgical Extraction is if your opponent is targeting one of your things with a Surgical Extraction, like a Vengevine, you can target the Vengevine they're targeting with a Surgical Extraction and fail to find the other Vengevines.
Exactly, because the wording on Surgical is up to 4 copies.
Yep. So you can counter a Surgical Extraction by surgicaling your own. This is a very popular play in Phoenix decks, where they can prevent themselves from getting kind of blown out by getting their Phoenixes all pulled out, or they could just lose one.
Yeah. Actually, Surgical says any number of cards. It doesn't say up to 4.
Yeah, any number.
Up to four, I think, is like Lost Legacy or something.
It says any number because it plays around cards like Relentless Wrath.
Yes. A good thing, too, with Collective Brutality is there are some cards we don't want to have in our hand. Vengevines, Prized Amalgams. We want those to be in the graveyard so that we can abuse their Enter the Battlefield from the Graveyard mechanic. Normally, when you pick up your opening 7, you want to see as few of those cards as possible. You really don't want to see Narcomoebas, Prized Amalgams, Vengevines, or Creeping Chills. You don't want those in your hand. It's difficult, though, to draw a 7 without seeing that. So evaluate your hand, then, without that card. Okay, how is this as a 6? Could I possibly get a better 6? Because, I mean, that Vengevine is not going to come down sooner than turn 4, and that's if you're able to get your fetches and get your green sources. And as you're milling yourself, it happens. You will mill over your Overgrown Tombs, and now you don't have a green source. Crap. Collective Brutality allows you to discard that. And all of these abilities on Collective Brutality are amazing. You get to duress your opponent. Target creature -2/-2. Or your opponent loses 2 and you gain 2 life. Wonderful.
A couple other cards I've seen in sideboards. It's not in yours, but a couple things that have been picked up. Force of Despair I've seen in a couple of these.
Yep.
It's part of the Force cycle. For you exile a black card on your opponent's turn, and you get to play this card. It says destroy all creatures that entered the battlefield this turn. So it's a one card answer to not dying to oops all spells.
Yeah, oops all spells. Storm if they are going the grape shot route. Or sorry, not grape shot, the empty the warrens route.
Yep. It's a way around it. Force of Negation. I've also seen decks play to fight against non-creature based combos like Ad Nauseam. It does work well in the deck. And even additional copies of Thoughtseize are acceptable.
Yeah, speaking of those two cards, my current sideboard right now has those. The list we're looking at right now, I'll go ahead. It's from my, my Knoxville open finish, where it was only top 32, but hey, I made top 32, so I was pretty happy with that. On a scale of 1 to 10, I would say this deck is probably just a little bit more difficult than the traditional mill. I think I'd give it about a 5. Maybe even a 6, because you do have to remember your graveyard triggers and your creatures coming out. And knowing when to turn the game plan from self-mill to targeted mill is another key attribute as well.
Player goes turn 1, Temple of Enlightenment, Lotus Bloom. What do you do turn 2? You glimpse the unthinkable of them.
Yep. You need to be targeting them because your opponent is playing Ad Nauseam. But I think that's going to do it for us, though. Both these strategies are very viable in Magic. Again, Modern is one of those, is the format that definitely rewards you for knowing your deck very well and tuning your sideboard to improve or to help you win the matchups that are close to winning. What would you think on that?
I agree with that 100%. Nothing really to change there. Know your deck really well. And once you know that, if you can know every other deck on top of that, you just have another edge on the field.
Yep. And just like with Mill, this deck too comes in at about $650, so it's a little bit on the cheaper end. The most expensive part being really, and I have it tuned pretty nicely where Polluted Delta is the main fetch that you definitely want. Then just any black fetches, so even Marsh Flats could be good. I have Bloodstained Mires in here, and I have two Verdant Catacombs. So we could definitely tune it down to be cheaper if needed. But that is going to do it for us on this mill special. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. We really hope you're enjoying these segments here. We do apologize. This one is a day late. We did go without a deck on December 22nd. Schedule conflicts and things like that, we just weren't able to get it. But so today, you will be getting both this special as well as the Storm special. Then after that, we still have, let me pull it up real quick. We have the Valakut special, followed by the band special. We're going to be talking different band combos, so definitely stay tuned for that. Again, if you're listening to us on our website or anywhere else, say maybe YouTube, if it does get posted to YouTube, you can find us on Spotify, Spreaker, and iTunes. Check us out on all social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Twitch, Instagram. And keep an eye out, too. We are expanding more into the esports world as we continue to develop the Snapcast and move forward into 2021. But that's going to do it for us here. Thanks for listening.